The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, I'll discuss how the Biden DOJ is covering up the crimes of the president and his family by removing a key IRS whistleblower from the investigation. Debbie's going to join me. We're going to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene's impeachment bills, the motives for Venezuelans coming across the border, and as a comic side note, how Biden qualified to get an honorary degree from Howard University. Hey, if you're listening on Apple, Google, or Spotify, or watching on Rumble, please subscribe to the podcast. Just hit the subscribe button. I'd appreciate it. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
There seems to be a full-blown cover-up going on inside the Biden administration to hide the crimes of the Biden family. Now, I mentioned that on the podcast, this was several days ago, that an IRS whistleblower had come forward. And this guy has told, well, he's told a bunch of executive branch agencies, but he's also told Congress that there is clear evidence of bribery. And there's also clear evidence of malfeasance by the Bidens, and that this is being blocked in the IRS, and it's being blocked also by the Biden DOJ. They're not allowing this investigation to go forward. In a sense, they're protecting their crime boss, Joe Biden. So the matter has become quite serious because it's bad enough when you have a criminal enterprise at the very highest reaches of our government. But then when the whole administration begins to cover up for the chief mafioso and his family, things get a lot worse. Now, the latest development is that this IRS whistleblower and his investigative team that were using the tax laws to really look at the ways in which all this money has flowed into the Biden family, money on which they may not have paid their appropriate taxes, this investigation has now been, in a sense, shut down by the Biden DOJ, and they have removed the whistleblower and his team from the criminal investigation. So in other words, it's basically, let's get the cops off the case so that the crooks can go free. Now, fortunately, this IRS guy seems to be a very credible and determined and relentless guy. He has two lawyers, and his lawyers have written a letter to congressional lawmakers, Republicans and Democrats, and he says that there is an ongoing investigation for tax fraud, lobbying crimes, money laundering, and he says that the DOJ is retaliating against him, which is a flagrant violation of the whistleblower law. It also constitutes obstruction of a congressional inquiry. Why? Because Congress is looking into this matter. And so the Biden DOJ is circling the wagons, apparently trying to put, you know, you may say cooperative people on this inquiry because they know how to avoid, let's not look at this, let's not look at that, that's no problem, nothing to see here, folks. They want those kinds of people doing the investigation. Now, Mark Little, who's a former DOJ lawyer, he's representing this IRS whistleblower, and he said his client, quote, wants to make protected whistleblower disclosures to Congress. He says he has already provided all the relevant information to the IRS, to the U.S. Treasury Inspector General, to the Office of the Inspector General, and the Department of Justice. So Inspector General Michael Horowitz has it, Attorney General Merrick Garland has it, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration Russell George has it, special counsel at the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, Henry Koerner, has it. But let's notice that people like Merrick Garland are part of the crooked operation. I'm not saying they're crooked themselves, but they have been brought in the way the mafia hires lawyers to cover up for them. Hey, listen, I don't want any of this tax stuff getting out. It's your job to obscure it. Merrick Garland appears to be, in that sense, the chief point man for protecting Biden crimes from coming to public light and coming to congressional light. Now, the IRS commissioner, Daniel Werfel, was before Congress at the end of April, and he said, oh, no, we have whistleblower protections. He said, quote, there will be no retaliation for anyone making an allegation or call to a whistleblower hotline. This was his actual quote. And the whistleblower statute, we should be very clear, isn't just about somehow ruining somebody or trying to fire them. It's also taking them off the inquiry. In other words, it's also removing them from the area where they can collect information that is relevant to wrongdoing and crimes. Here's the whistleblower law. It says that the whistleblower is, quote, protected from retaliatory personnel actions, including receiving a significant change in duties, responsibilities, or working conditions, which is clearly happening because of his disclosures to Congress. I think the good news is that the Republicans are not their usual timid selves here. I think they recognize I won't say smell blood, but I think they recognize that there's a really crooked operation here. And it is of a great magnitude. This is not a single case where, you know, the wealthy aristocrat in Moscow sent some money to Hunter Biden for a particular transaction. No, this is an international racketeering scheme that is masterminded by Joe Biden, carried out by multiple, maybe as many as 10 or more members of the Biden family. And now apparently with all these enablers, the enablers not of the crimes, but the enablers of the cover-up of the crimes, and they too need to be held accountable. Okay, guys, it's time to pull out your wallets or at least your checkbook. Summer's around the corner. I'm asking for your help to bless a child with a mom or dad in prison by joining my campaign to send prisoners' kids for a week of fun, fresh air, and Christ-centered activities that can literally transform their lives forever. I want to personally thank each of you who have already stepped up here on my podcast to help this campaign to send kids with a mom or dad in prison to Angel Tree Camp. It's a special program from the nonprofit Prison Fellowship, helping break the cycle of crime by reaching boys and girls with the gospel in a week-long adventure filled with summer camp activities. And the people guiding the Angel Tree Camp program, they're solid, caring individuals who say they're really blessed to be working with kids that your donations send to the camp. Here's David Moy, who served as director of an Angel Tree Camp in Indiana for 8 years.
I mean, just fell in love with the ministry, being involved there, getting to see kids' lives impacted. A lot of kids, you know, it was the best week of their year, and they got to really just kind of break from a lot of the chaos happening in life, and they got to just be a kid for a week. And just being able to see that positive environment for them, being able to share Christ with them and just love on them, it was just really an amazing experience.
Just go to my website, DineshDeSouza.com, click on the Angel Tree banner at the top of the page, or you can phone in your gift by calling my special number. Here's the number, 888-206-2801. I'll tell you again, 888-206-2801. $400 sends two children to camp, $800 four children. So you do the math, see how many kids you can bless. Once again, the Angel Tree banner, easy to access. Go to DineshDeSouza.com. It's at the top of my homepage. And thank you, not just for listening to the podcast, but for joining my campaign to help Prison Fellowship's Angel Tree Camp. And finally, the impeachment train is leaving the station. This is actually very important. I've alluded to it at various times on the podcast, but here's Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's announced impeachment articles against Joe Biden, Merrick Garland, Christopher Wray, Alejandro Mayorkas, and even going further down, Matthew Graves, who's the chief prosecutor of the January 6th defendants. Mm-hmm. And, You know, to me, this is actually a really good development because it follows through on the logic of what's going on. I mean, what was disappointing to me about the Durham report, an elaborate scheme concocted by the Hillary campaign, signed off on by Obama, signed off on by Loretta Lynch, James Comey was in on it, Clapper was in on it, Brennan was in on it, all these top officials, really to rig an election. And then at the end of it, he goes, well, we really hope that the FBI improves its procedures. So that's called not following through on what you've just shown, on what you've just confirmed. But here, if it is true that these people are derelict in their duties, they are ruining the country on multiple fronts, they are breaking the law, they're engaging in some cases in serious crimes, obviously, we should do what we can to impeach them. Well, the impeachment won't succeed. Well, who cares? The point is it'll tie them up. It will tie them up in knots. It will expose their crimes and lawlessness to public scrutiny. There's no way the media can cover it. Yeah. So what do you make of this? So you were saying about Biden.
Right. So, you know, it's great that she wants to do this with Biden. But the reason that she's putting forth is the border. Right. Which is a huge reason. But I don't think that that's the reason that they could really get him on that impeach him.
That's not the arrow.
That's not the arrow. The arrow is that this man is as corrupt as a third world dictator. He is a true dictator. They talk about Trump having been a dictator. Well, if he was, he sucked at it. This guy's really good at it because he involves all of the agencies that can actually implement these things, like Hugo Chavez did, like Maduro did. And so, you know, did Trump have a DOJ?
No.
Did Trump have the FBI? No. So how could he have been a dictator?
I mean, Trump, in fact, had, it seems, half the government working to subvert him.
Exactly.
And Biden, on the other hand, has the entire Democratic establishment covering for him.
And that is a true dictatorship. So
what would you? So you'd go after him on the IRS whistleblower. You'd go after him on all the money transfers.
China corruption. You know, getting money during his vice presidency. Who knows what he's? If he used the office of the vice presidency to do these things, what makes you think he's not using the office of the presidency?
And it doesn't matter whether or not he's repeating the crimes of before. The fact of the matter is we have a criminal at the highest reaches of government. And that's not something that should be tolerated for 1 minute. A lot of times, I mean, if you look at Nixon's offenses that got Nixon to resign in Watergate, it wasn't while Nixon was president. Remember, this was during the campaign,
right. The
Watergate break-in. Yeah. So, and Nixon's only role was in the cover-up. Nixon wasn't, in fact, the perpetrator.
Right. I think that this makes Watergate look like a walk in the park.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this is what you call corruption.
Now, as these things develop next week, I'm going to go into detail in this stuff because I think, for example, when Marjorie Taylor Greene lays out the case against Christopher Wray, it is very systematic and very devastating, and it makes the case. So we won't make that case here because she's making a separate case. I mean, think about it, the case against Mayorkas, and I agree with Mayorkas. I think you can go after him on the border alone. Why? He's the chief border official.
Right.
Charged with enforcing the law.
Right. Now, he is taking orders, right?
He is taking orders.
But still, I mean, I think that...
Well, it doesn't matter. If he's taking orders, yes, what that means, because he is the guy in charge with carrying out these duties, and he's taken an oath of office to carry out these duties, it's his duty to say, my superiors are telling me not to enforce the law. He won't do that because he's in on it. Exactly.
Yes.
And this guy is also, by the way, a brazen liar. So with a straight face, he goes and says things like the border is secure.
Oh, yeah.
There's no problem at the border.
And he takes credit for things that, like, for example, Governor Abbott, you know, making sure that the illegal migrants couldn't get up that ravine, you know, where he had the barbed wire and they were kind of shooshing people off. Right. Mayorkas says it's him. And actually, it was not him. It was not the federal government doing that.
In fact, Abbott has made it really clear that the Texas National Guard is up against not the illegals, not the cartels. They're up against the feds.
Yeah.
They're up against the Biden
government.
People who are trying to undo and thwart what they're doing. So, yeah, there's a level of public dishonesty that's going on here. And they kept saying, well, Trump told, 810,000 lies and so on. By and large, they'd refer to casual remarks about Trump, even if Trump mispronounces Thailand. Well, let's count that as a lie. Here, you're talking about lies coming from the very spokesman for the State Department, spokesman for the DOJ, the press secretary, and of course, Kamala Harris and Biden himself. Debbie and I had a New Year's resolution. Let's lose weight. And thankfully, PhD Weight Loss came to the rescue. We started the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program 16 weeks ago. Debbie has already lost 20 pounds and I'm down 27 pounds and have reached my goal weight. I'm now on so-called maintenance. The program is based on science and nutrition. No injections, no pills, no long hours in the gym, no severe calorie restriction, just good, sound, scientifically proven nutrition. It's so simple. They make it easy by providing 80% of your food at no additional cost. They tell you when and what to eat. And guess what? You can do this without ever being hungry. The founder, Dr. Ashley Lucas, you might have seen her on the program a day or two ago. She has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. She's also a registered dietitian. She helps people lose weight and, most important, maintain that weight loss for life. So if you're ready to take the step of losing weight like Debbie and I have, call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900. You can also find them online at myphdweightloss.com. The number to call, again, 864-644-1900. Debbie, I was a little distraught the last couple of days. She just got news that her aunt in Venezuela, in fact, kind of her last living relative, this was the sister of her dad, died in Venezuela and died, in a sense, in a country that she saw had really gone down and with no easy hope, no immediate hope of restoration. At the same time, and talking about this, we talk about the larger issue of Venezuela and, of course, about the Venezuelans, and there's a bunch of them trying to escape now, get out of Venezuela and make their way to the southern border of the United States and get in here. But Debbie, who knows much more about this than I do, says that those aren't, you might think, well, wait a minute, aren't these Venezuelans running away from socialism? Aren't these Venezuelans the entrepreneurial types that we want in the United States? And the answer to that, for reasons Debbie will give, is no.
No. And you know, one of the last things that my aunt told me before she passed, well, first of all, she absolutely adored Trump. She called him her blonde, beautiful man. That's how she referred to Trump.
I said, they're about the same age. And Debbie goes, my aunt is 90. So yeah. She's actually, she's a little, quote, too old for Trump.
Yeah, she's a little too old for Trump, but she loved him. So anyway, one of the last things she told me was how devastating socialism was and how she was so sad that her, she knew that her days were numbered. Obviously she was 90 years old and she did have high blood pressure and everything. But, she basically said that the last years of her life, she had hoped that she would see Venezuela free again. And that was not to be. But she said that people just walked around like zombies. They weren't smiling anymore. They in Venezuela, people partied all the time. As a kid, I just remember there always being people having just massive parties. Any excuse to have a massive party. My grandmother had thousands of people in her house. Not really, but it seemed that way. Always having people over and people were always laughing. And
well, interestingly, what your aunt said is the reason it's very credible is that when I first met Debbie and we would connect with her aunt was actually kind of upbeat about Venezuela. I mean, not upbeat in the sense that Debbie would say to her aunt, isn't it sad that you have to go from one grocery store where you buy potatoes to another one where you have to get, cereal and then to another one? And the aunt was like, well, that's how it is. It's a little extra effort, but it's no big deal. The food is available. And then as time passed, It didn't really matter how many stores you went to. There just wasn't stuff to buy.
Yeah. And then not to mention, she basically said the Bolívar, which is the Venezuelan currency, is worthless. Its toilet paper is worth more than the
Bolívar. I mean, talk about the doctor who's a friend of your aunt and how much she makes.
Oh, my goodness. So she's a professor.
A professor.
A professor at a college. And she makes about $20 a month. Think about that. $20 a month. So, you know, we would help my aunt, and we wouldn't send her a lot of money, but what we did send her equated to a lot of money. I mean, it was the equivalent. We sent her a couple of hundred dollars every month. That was the equivalent of about $10,000 a month.
So she was able to be comfortable.
She was able to live, really. And even the funeral expenses comparatively are extremely cheap. When you think about how much it costs to bury
someone
says
now. She goes, the funeral expenses are just a couple of hundred dollars, a few hundred dollars. And I said, well, in India, you can bury someone for like $20. Debbie's like, this is not true. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. Well, sure enough, we look it up. Average cost of a funeral in India. We take the exchange rate. We divide by 75 because 75 rupees to a dollar, 75 rupees to a dollar. And it turns out that the average burial cost in India is about $25.
Yeah, I know.
Let's talk about these migrants, these Venezuelans.
So a lot of the migrants, illegal migrants that are at the border are Venezuelan. I've been told by my friends and family in Venezuela that these people are not good people. These are the bottom of the barrel of Venezuela. These were the people that wanted the goods in Venezuela. They wanted socialism because they wanted to have all of the amenities and things that other people had without working for it, right? Some of them criminals, probably some of them even colectivos, who knows? These are the criminal gangs that terrorize Venezuelans, sanctioned by the Venezuelan government. But these people are really very, very bad people. And they do have kids, obviously. So some of the families that you see with the kids and all of that, very sad for the children. But some of these people are criminals.
We don't want them here. These are people who bought into socialism. They supported the Chavistas. They supported the outrages perpetrated by the Chavistas against freedom-loving Venezuelans. Now they've noticed that it doesn't work in Venezuela, but they haven't given up on socialism. Their point is, where can we find free stuff that we can't get anymore in Venezuela?
Why do you think they're okay with being housed, being given vouchers for food, that kind of thing? Why do you think they're okay with that?
Government pays the expenses to stay in a hotel for 3 months.
Yeah, so these Venezuelans are not going to vote.
In short, we're importing the worst type of people in the world, and no wonder the Democrats say these people are just like us. Debbie and I started taking Relief Factor a couple of years ago. We've noticed a huge difference, a difference in our joints. Nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains are totally gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution called Relief Factor. Now, how does it work? Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor become regular customers. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's a true believer. She can now do exercises that for a long time she wasn't able to do. So Relief Factor's been a big game changer for her, her aunt, other members of our family, Mike here in the studio, and for many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for a discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. The number again, 800-4-RELIEF, or go to relieffactor.com. You'll feel the difference. There was a story widely reported over the past few days about, this was in New York, that several hotels in Orange County, now not Orange County, California, but Orange County, New York, had evicted homeless veterans who were staying in those hotels. And the reason was that they wanted to make room for illegals. So now, why would the hotels do that? Well, the answer was that the hotels were getting more money to house the illegals per night than they would get for housing the homeless vets.
But the story has been kind of called into question by something that Debbie showed me today, which is a report in New York that has these officials for the hotels vehemently denying that this is going on, vehemently denying that they have, in fact, evicted the vets. And in the case of one hotel, they go, we didn't really have any vets staying here, so we couldn't have done that because now, the fact of the matter is that New York has been has seen about 60,000 illegals pouring into the state. Some of them dispatched by the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, and the governor of Texas, Abbott. And the mayor of New York is up in arms and is sort of said, we don't know what to do with these people. We're going to have to send them upstate. And there's a legal fight going on about whether they can send them upstate. But I think, you know, this struck an emotional chord because in some ways it totally symbolized a veteran, a guy who's given so much for this country, has been here, has made sacrifices. And then the illegal who comes in, the point is the country doesn't owe these people anything.
No, and that's the most infuriating part of every, set aside the veterans, which is a really bad story, but let's just say there wasn't that story. Why are we as a taxpayer paying for people that are not even supposed to be here?
Right.
Well, you know,
and not only not supposed to be here, there is a long line of people who want to be here. There's a long line of people who are going through the system. We have a complex immigration system.
Yes.
It allows you to come in. Sometimes you can come in on special permits because you have extraordinary skills. You can come in because you have labor qualifications in areas that the country needs people. You can come in because you got close relatives in the country. You can come in because you married an American. So there are ways to come legally. But this whole thing about, I don't like it in my own country. It's, you know, it's a little violent over here and I'm facing economic stress. These are not legitimate reasons to claim asylum. So first of all, the vast, vast majority of people claiming asylum, these are bogus claims. And I can say that generically. In the past, the country was much more careful about saying, listen, if there's an upheaval in a communist country, we know that those people are fleeing tyranny and that's what it means to be a refugee and claim asylum. You are fleeing political tyranny.
Yeah.
But the what's going on, that is completely different from, I live in Sri Lanka, it's a little bit unpleasant over here, it gets really hot in the summer, I live in a hut, I can't get a good job. Those are not motives for asylum.
Socialism doesn't work here, but maybe it works in America.
Exactly, because it'll take you guys longer to run out of money than it took, for example, the Chavistas in Venezuela. So yes, I think that there's enough doubt on this story now that we can't be sure what really is happening. The origins of the story were from a woman named Sharon Tony Finch, who's an Army vet herself. She got a Purple Heart. She has a foundation which actually helps these vets. And she made the point, a number of these vets have come to me. They said that they were evicted. We're trying to find temporary housing for them. So something seems to have gone wrong here. But it may be that the details of the story are off. Because see, here, for example, is an attorney for the Crossroads Hotel. There are not now and never were any group of veterans at the hotel, and certainly none that were kicked out to make way for migrant asylum seekers. So are these illegals and asylum seekers getting hotel accommodations? Yes. Is the government paying for them, New York taxpayers and the government of New York? Yes. But were some specific veterans pushed out to make room for the illegals? That appears to be less clear. So while the story itself is called into doubt, I think your point about the larger problem, which is the country is taking on this massive influx, and it's all at our expense.
All at our expense. Not only that, but let's just say that there are no hotels that will take them. Where are they going to live? They're going to camp out, you know, in front of establishments, in front of houses, wherever. And it's just going to make us look like a third world country.
Well, I mean, even third world countries aren't stupid enough to do things like this. I suppose one could say that you know, rich countries do stupid stuff that poor countries wouldn't do. A poor country, I mean, if you tried to flood India, which is already a heavily populated country, the Indians would immediately be up in arms and they'd be like, first of all, we barely have enough for ourselves. The last thing we're going to be doing is accommodating tens of millions of people coming in from other countries that are basically looking to eat our food, sleep on our beds, use up our education system, which again, there's barely enough enough to go around. So in some ways, necessity and even poverty imposes a certain realism and common sense that goes out the window. So these are terrible policies, and whether or not this story is...
Yeah, and they're terrible policies, and they're done on purpose.
They're done on purpose. So there are terrible policies that are being done because they benefit one political party. And that political party is pretending that they're doing it. See, political parties in power are supposed to act in the national interest. They're not acting in our interest. They're acting in their own political self-interest at our expense. Debbie and I are eating better now and we've lost weight, but foods we can't seem to eat enough of, and it's a requirement, are veggies and fiber. Now, there's no better way to get all your fruits and veggies plus fiber than with Balance of Nature. Balance of Nature fiber and spice right here. It's a proprietary blend of 12 spices for digestive health. The intense flavors and deep colors of spices are the most condensed whole food source of phytonutrition available. It's recommended to be paired with these. The star product, fruits and veggies in a capsule. So easy. Select the whole health system for the best price. Start your journey to better health right now. Take advantage of Balance of Nature's terrific offer. $25 off plus free fiber and spice with your first preferred order of fruits and veggies when you use discount code America. The offer can end at any time, so act now. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751, or go to balanceofnature.com. Use discount code America. There's a very sad story out of South Carolina involving a state representative. His name is Brandon Guffey. And Debbie was filling me in on this, and I was just kind of shaking my head, because this is a case where, I mean, there's a lot of political division in the country. There's a lot of political targeting, where people harass people because they belong to a rival opinion or a rival party. But this is a case where that extends to going after the child, the teenage son of one of these guys, of Representative Guffey, with very tragic consequences.
Now, I'm not really sure if this is a politically motivated crime, but I do know that it is a crime in America, that it happens a lot. The FBI, for whatever it's worth, said that last year there were at least 7,000 reports of sextortion of minors. And this is called sextortioning because what it is you pretend like you're a girl, you know, that you, all of a sudden you see this guy maybe on Instagram or whatever. You're like, ooh, you're cute. You know, can we have a relationship? Blah, blah, blah. And then you start exchanging messages, right? This is an 18-year-old boy or a 17-year-old boy who's kind of, you know how boys
flattered
are.
Flattered by the idea. Yeah.
So then this so-called girl on the other end sends a nude photo of her and says, hey, can you, you know, reciprocate? Can you send me one of you? So the poor dumb boy, or, you know, whatever, naive boy, sends a photo of himself to this sextortionist, doesn't know, obviously, that it's a sextortionist, thinks it's a girl. Then suddenly, this other person says, hey, you know what? I'm not really so-and-so, but I have a nude photo of you now that I'm going to show all over the internet unless you give me money. And so this poor boy, the son, Gavin is his name, son of this
Representative Guffey.
Was mortified. I mean, he was so
he fell for this.
He fell for it. And he basically gave this person $25, which was all he had. And this person came back and said, he used Venmo to send him $25. And he was telling him that he would get more money. Please don't expose me. Please don't send these images out. They didn't care. They did it anyway. And so,
well, what's cunning here is I see from the article that they give him the impression that this is a disappearing image. So I'm sending you an image. It's basically going to be deleted. You send me an image. It'll be deleted. It's just going to be, I can just take a quick look at it. It's not going to be stored anywhere. But what they don't realize is that there's a separate device recording these images. And so that's how the sextortion scheme works.
Yep.
So, you have this terrible phenomenon of this dad, Guffey. He hears a bang in his house And it's actually his son committing suicide.
His son using a gun.
And I think it's possibly because the son realized, not only am I going to be embarrassed, but
it's going to be bad for my father.
Right.
And so his dad, because of this, not only that, but obviously he was distraught, but because of it, he decided to do a bill to make this a felony conviction and 5 years in prison for anybody that does this to a child, right, or another human being. And because of that, this person retaliated and sent the dad a message saying something, you know, like basically taunting him. I forget where it is in the article, but...
Well, he basically mocks him.
He mocks him, yeah.
And he sends a kind of, here we go. He said, did I tell you your son begged for his life with a laughing face emoji. So this is, there's a level of sort of ruthlessness. It's, in some ways, social media seems benign. We have access to all this information.
Yeah, but
all
it's
these
more dangerous.
Funny, but there's a dark side of the internet. I think we're all aware of it, When you come across a story like this, you're getting a window of the kind of bad people that are out there.
And then they say, if you can extort 10 teenage boys that aren't going to say anything for $100 each and do all that with one image that you got a girl, it's fairly simple. You know, basically, you are making a lot of money from this. And the dad
was so infuriated, and I got to commend him for this. He's like, listen, I'm gonna quit my job. I'm gonna get out of the state house. I'm gonna spend all my time going after these people. And his wife was like, no, don't do that because
you're one of the few people that have a voice that can get out there and truly make a difference. And so for them, that is the most important thing. To do that, to leave that kind of legacy called Gavin's Law. It's going to be signed into law soon. I think.
Unfortunately, they haven't caught the bad guys here yet. They're looking for him. No arrests have been made. And there's an ongoing investigation. But I certainly hope that they get him. And I certainly hope that
And educate your kids. Like, tell them these are scammers. Just like, you know, they're scammers that are sex traffickers. You know, they lure kids into thinking that they're just their friends. And then they have all of this. This happens
in
America.
We all need to be smart enough. Just like we don't respond these days to people who say you've just come into a giant inheritance in Nigeria. Just send $3,000 to come. Exactly. So we're all on to that, but we need to be on to the fact that even if you get text messages and so on from people you don't recognize, don't respond to them, in part because they're also ways to steal your data.
And your life.
I think when it comes to towels, nothing compares to MyPillow towels. Mike Lindell has really hit a home run with his towels. Imagine having towels that actually work. They actually dry you. Now, the MyPillow towels are soft to the touch without the lotion-y feel. They have proprietary technology, which makes them highly absorbent. Other towels feel good in the store, but they don't absorb. MyPillow towels are available in multiple sizes and styles. They're made with 100% USA cotton. They're machine washable and durable. 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. And Mike is running a flash sale on the My Towels. 6-piece set for $25 with promo code Dinesh. The towels are regularly $99.98. So it's an amazing offer, which includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, 2 washcloths. So it's time to stock up. Call 800-876-0227. That number again, 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. Don't forget to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H Dinesh. Joe Biden recently got an honorary degree. An honorary degree. Actually, they should be taking away his degrees that he does have because he's no longer capable of retaining the knowledge that those degrees once required.
He's a corrupt goofball.
He's a corrupt goofball. Those two things don't normally go together because you think of a goofball as a kind of an innocent, you know, Forrest Gump. And then you think of corruption as requiring a devious mind. But he does have a sinister mind.
He's sinister already.
And he has a sinister cabal.
He does.
A sinister cabal around him. But anyway, what people are really chuckling at in a sneering way, is the fact that when he got this honorary degree, the president of Howard, a guy named Dr. Wayne Frederick,
By the way, a lot of times these guys who have dubious intellectual credentials just go around parading doctor. People who really have good credentials normally, I mean, they'll call themselves professor, but if you call yourself doctor and you're not a medical doctor, this is a little bit suspect, like Dr. Jill Biden. Well, in any event, this guy, in handing out the honor degree, he chooses to praise Biden for two things, and both are funny. The first one is his analytical intellect. I mean, not just his intellect, which would be suspect enough.
He has no intellect.
But analytical suggests precise. It suggests a certain carefulness, a certain ability to discriminate, an ability to lay out an argument. When's the last time you heard Biden make an argument about anything? About the best he can do is a kind of a staccato outburst, like, come on, man! That's about all he does, all the time.
Yeah.
And the other thing is he was praised for, quote, this is even funnier, his popularity on both sides of the aisle.
That is a joke.
It's a complete joke.
Absolute joke. Because Biden is nothing but divisive. I mean, look at the speech itself that he made.
I mean, look at all the F Joe, Brandon and the Let's Go Brandon chants across the country, even at sports games,
Wherever
Biden goes. So it's pretty clear that a substantial portion of the country regards him with contempt, with derision.
But there's a reason for it. There's a reason for it because he himself is divisive. He says things about half of the country that is not favorable to half of the country.
Well, he's callous and he's mean-spirited and then look, he gets this award for his analytical intellect and his popularity on both sides. And then he gives a speech that is laced with invective that demonizes really all his political opponents as white supremacists. Here we go. He goes, "White supremacy is, quote, the most dangerous terrorist threat to our homeland."
No, he is.
He is, and his administration is, and the FBI is, but certainly not white supremacy. Yeah. I mean, look.
Not to mention, honey, he's the most racist person that I know. Besides,
well, I mean,
Bird,
the guy,
he's dead.
Right, exactly. He was his mentor was Bird, who was in the Klan.
Look at all the things he said about blacks back when he was a young senator. You know, that they were predators. He said all those things, right?
He treated young blacks basically like these are people who are subhuman. And these are people that we cannot apply normal remedies to these people because they're like animals.
Yeah.
And that's the clear implication of what he said. And now suddenly this guy's metamorphosed into a fighter against white supremacy. A guy, by the way, who palled around with segregationists, who said that they were good friends of his, he could do business with them. This is the guy we're talking about, Joe Biden. And I think here is where, again, the role of the media in suppressing Biden's past, in covering for him, and in solemnly treating this like this is a genuine article, all of this, I think, really rankles.
It does. It does. And it's really funny on Twitter because, you know, of course, the article is saying that on Twitter, the conservatives were like mocking it, right? Because the RNC research says before he went to his Delaware beach home today, Biden was given an honorary doctorate from Howard University for his, and then quote unquote, quote, sound analytical intellect, unquote, and popularity on both sides of the aisle, laughing emoji.
Well, talking about the sound analytical intellect, there was a quite illuminating Fetterman made some comments, and his comments were a complete word salad. They were garbled. They made absolutely no sense. But then an article appears in which says this is what Fetterman said, and his entire statement was completely cleaned up. It was in perfectly good English. Mm-hmm. And so what people did on social media, very effective, they posted side by side the verbatim transcript of what Fetterman said and then what the adoring reporter said he said.
Right.
And it was not the same at all. It was completely different.
And that's
basically
what they
the reporter
do.
Was sanitizing Fetterman, making him sound not only coherent but eloquent. So we've got this strange phenomenon. I mean, Dianne Feinstein, who basically doesn't even know where she is, doesn't even know that she's not in Washington, D.C.
Oh, no.
You've got Fetterman and you've got Biden. So the Democrats really know how to pick them. Guys, I'd like to invite you to check out my Locals channel. I post lots of exclusive content there, including content that's censored on other social media platforms. On Locals, you really get Dinesh Unchained, Dinesh Uncensored. You can also interact with me directly. I do a weekly Q&A every Tuesday, and no topic is off limits. I've also uploaded some very cool films to Locals, both documentaries and feature films, both my films and also films by other independent producers, including 2000 Mules. I'm doing a new film this year, and I'll be giving you the inside scoop on Locals. By the way, if you're an annual subscriber, you are able to stream and watch all these films for free. So check out my channel at Dinesh.locals.com. I'd love to have you along for this great ride. Again, it's Dinesh.locals.com. I'm in the chapter called The Ghost in the Machine, Why Man is More Than Matter. And I'm discussing the philosophical doctrine called materialism, a doctrine very popular with skeptics and atheists, particularly atheists who invoke the authority of science. And what they say is that we live in a world that is made up of just material objects, atoms and molecules. And those are the things that science can examine, can measure, can weigh, can look at. And nothing else really exists. All we see, all we taste, all we can measure are these objects in the world. But I think that there's a deep problem in extending this materialistic understanding to human beings. For starters, we experience the outside world, which is the world that is described by the laws of physics and chemistry, completely differently than we experience ourselves. This is a point that was made, I think, most clearly by the philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer. And he says this. He says, all other things we experience indirectly from the outside, kind of through the apparatus of our senses. But he says, but ourselves we experience directly, from the inside, without the involvement of our senses. I don't need my eyes to sort of experience myself from within. I don't need my ears. I don't need my sense of touch or any of that. And it's only about ourselves, says Schopenhauer, that we have this kind of inside information, which is the clearest, most fundamental knowledge we can have. So think about it. Well, for someone else standing out there, they see Dinesh and they notice that I'm 5'9", I've got dark hair, I'm wearing glasses. They experience me from the outside, but there's a whole inner Dinesh to which they have no direct access. They can infer it. They can act in the presumption that I have an interior world, but they have no direct access to it. They only have access to their interior world. So the point is that based on this privileged and unique access, we know that the external account of reality, however accurate it is in describing raindrops or stones or even cheetahs, it can't be the full story when it's when it comes to describing ourselves. Now, start with something really simple. We know for a fact that we exist. Now, the philosopher David Hume said, well, we don't really know this because he says, I'm quoting Hume now, when I enter most intimately into what I call myself, I always stumble on some particular perception or other of heat or cold, light or shade, love or hate, pain or pleasure. I can never catch myself at any time without a perception and never can observe anything but the perception. What Hume is saying is we can acknowledge that we have, that a feeling exists, a thought exists, an observation exists, but where is the separate I that is having this thought, having this feeling? Hume goes, I don't see the I, only there's just the feeling, there's just the thought, there's just the observation and so on. But I think that Hume is making a mistake here. He thinks that the self is a fiction because it cannot be empirically located. He wants you to sort of identify the position, the location of the I that is having these feelings. But the remarkable thing is we are conscious of our own existence prior to having any feelings and thoughts. And besides our feelings and thoughts, we experience as possessions. I'll talk about my thoughts, my feelings. Now, when something is a possession, it is not the same as us. But remember, the self is experienced directly. I would never talk about myself as something that is a possession. Myself is me. It's identical with me, but my feelings, my thoughts, my emotions are things that I have. They're things that I seem to possess. So Schopenhauer writes that as we are the subjects of our own inquiry, The materialist mistake, and this would be a mistake made by Hume also, is, quote, that of the subject that forgets to take account of itself. We're subjects, and all our experience comes through that, and we can't forget that that is the starting point of all experience. So Hume is having sensations, but he's ignoring the fact that he is the one that is doing the observing. He is allowing his indirect knowledge of external phenomena to somehow overcome or trump his direct knowledge of the I that is having those experiences. Now, we don't just exist, we're also conscious. Now, this consciousness, again, is immaterial. It doesn't seem to have any material composition. And the consciousness is kind of basic. We can't get behind it. It's not like, well, here's the consciousness, let's put it on a microscope and observe. Let's step outside of it. No, the consciousness is sort of part of our apparatus and inseparable from us. We seem to share this consciousness with other animals, but not with plants, or at least seemingly not with plants, and certainly not with non-living things. And human consciousness is of a different order than animal consciousness. Now, consider, for example, the way that we experience music. From a materialist point of view, what is music? Well, it's nothing more than kind of vibrations that collide with eardrums and provide neural reactions in the brain. But hey, if you're listening to a song, you experience the music in a completely different way. Even our most mundane thoughts and experiences are inexplicable when described purely in terms of physical and chemical transactions. So a doctor, for example, can look inside my brain. He can say, well, I'm making some observations about some activity in your cerebral cortex. But I say, okay, if you can do that, tell me what my thoughts and feelings are. And his answer is, I can't do that. He might be able to tell in a general sense if I'm experiencing emotions because the emotional part of my brain is being stimulated. But what emotions I'm having, what thoughts, what feelings, there's no way for any medical personnel to know what those things are unless I tell them. So what am I getting at here? I'm showing the limitations of the purely material world by showing that inside ourselves, there is a whole lot going on from the existence of our identity, who we are, I, to our consciousness, and that neither of those things seem reducible or even explainable in purely material terms.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.